Blog Talk Radio.
From the staggering statistics of illegal crime in just Texas to the horrifically bad Iran secret deal and broadcasting from a sturdy homie underground converted missile silo, Kelly O'Connell, 606, 724, 2015, 24th of July, and I was watching and reading last night. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe the stuff they were saying about this deal. But even worse, illegal alien crime wave in Texas, 611,234 crimes, 2,993 murders. Can you believe that? 523-1450, 805-6180 on AM Las Cruces. That's incredible. This is published July the 22nd by PJ Media. PJ Media obtained a never-before-released copy of a Texas Department of Safety, basically Department of Public Safety report on human smuggling to try to figure out how big the problem was. And as part of that, and I mean, this was not ever released. This is funny. You've got Rick Perry, who's been spending years trying to get the attention of the feds or whoever else on the problems in Texas, and they didn't even apparently know that this was out there, this information. The Texas Department of Public Safety published, now this is amazing, listen to this, foreign aliens committed 611,234 unique crimes in Texas from 2008 to 2014. That's only a six-year period. So that's 100,000 crimes a year and nearly 3,000 homicides or 3,000 murders. Isn't that incredible? This also includes thousands of homicides and sexual assaults. Well, obviously homicides, but from October 2008 to April 2014, get this, it's even more amazing. Texas identified a total of 177,588 unique criminal alien defendants booked into Texas county jails. These individuals were identified through Secure Communities Initiative, in which Texas has participated since October 2008. More interesting is this doesn't include anybody that they were not able to get fingerprints from. So, wow. This is so crazy. And you don't think it's a problem, right? Yeah, I mean, you think it's a human rights issue, right? I mean, these people coming in, they want a better place to live. They're law-abiding. Let me ask you this. Just from what little you know about Mexico, if you're not Mexican, if you're not from Mexico, if your family's not from there, and you don't, you know, you didn't grow up with stories about it, or you didn't grow up there, just based on how they do things in Juarez in recent years, how law understanding do you think that culture is? I'm just curious. I mean, do they have the same understanding of law as we do? So if you bring a bunch of these people in here without any training whatsoever, you don't make them go through any courses, any history lessons about America or studies on our, you know, what do they call that, civics course. You don't teach them anything about the Constitution, how the law works, how the justice system is set up. How could these people possibly be adapted to this country? But above and beyond that, let's just say that the average Mexican person living in Mexico is just as law-abiding as any American over here. Who's to say, based on what you just heard right there, that Donald Trump is wrong in saying that they're dumping off their criminals? I mean, why wouldn't they? Let's just reverse it. If Mexico was taking anybody who crossed the border, they were welcoming like long-lost family members, like we do. Why would it be wrong? Why would it be bad public policy for us to push all of our criminals to the border? And I'm not even claiming that Mexico is doing that, but why wouldn't you, as part of this group of people that you're exporting, why not include a big dose of, criminals? It struck me, it's an absolutely staggering number. We've been talking about it for quite a while, but anyway. All right, so we've got another story. I've got Ben Rossin coming in the second hour. So Tom, I think it was Tom that called up and wanted some more local content. So we'll get some local stuff with him. Here's a second story for you. Iran secret deal. In the midst of this deal with Iran between America and the Iranians, you've got a secret, not just one, but two secret deals. Now, not only is the White House not sharing with us, the public, what is in these secret deals, but they're not even sharing with Congress. I find that absolutely jaw-dropping. In addition, even more staggering, John Kerry, who's been under a lot of attack, the Secretary of State from Massachusetts, who's always breaking a leg or something, parasailing, high diving, parachuting, whatever. He doesn't even know the details of these deals. Now, I ask you, when Nancy Pelosi says, vote for this bill, pass this bill, and we'll find out what's in it, when our own Ryan, at one time possible vice president, Paul Ryan, says, vote for this, we'll tell you about what's in it, how does that make you feel? Now, when the Iranians tell you, vote for this, you can find out what's in it later, how does that make you feel? This is crazy.
And regulations.
It's absolutely one of the craziest things that I've ever seen in my life. I can't even imagine.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Senator
Reagan. Let me ask you this. Would Reagan allow this? Would Donald Trump allow this? I'm not even comparing Trump to Reagan. Trump was truly the most gifted politician of not just his generation, but at least last 60 years. JFK was a very gifted politician, too. But you know, JFK didn't get a chance to really show his stuff, but it is amazing what is getting jammed down our throats. All right, so let's come back and hear a little bit from a interaction between the cruise missile, the cruiser, Ted Cruz, and the one of the heads of the immigration enforcement. It was a very interesting interaction. I think that you'll find it fascinating. Kelly O'Connell, 6:15 on the button, and we're going to come back. 523-1450, 805-6180. 600,000 crimes by illegals, 611,000 in the last 6 years. Isn't that just stop you in your tracks? 3,000 of murders? So what is this great genius from next door? What was the governor's name over there, by the way? He's made such a big impression on me. Actually, I liked Rick Perry. But what is he attacking? This is what I don't get. And this is the theme for the rest of the week, which happens to end today. Stop apologizing. GOP, why don't, shouldn't we be nice? The kind of apologies that the left asks for has nothing to do with being nice. It has to do with subjugation, driving people to their knees, making them hop and skip like a scalded cat, forcing other people to accept your values, not just silently decide to silently stop resisting them, but actually bow down to them. The Rick Perrys, the Marco Rubios, all of these other little squirrels, these GOP squirrels that don't have any cojones. What's the point of being in politics and power if you can't stand up for what you believe in? You know? I don't get this. You know, you get elected so you can immediately capitulate. You can just give in. And anytime somebody calls you a racist, you just apologize. Or a homophobe or whatever. I mean, so Rick Perry puts out this thing. I can't even find it now, but something along the lines of going after. So they got the dumbest person. The person with the reputation, Rick Perry might be very smart, but he got picked by this little group. This reminds me of what was that show, A Little Rascals or whatever. This group of GOP, they're just lightweights. I mean, I would vote for any of them based on the idea that they would follow general policy of pro-growth and everything, but, you know, build up the military, stop making deals with Iran and stuff like that, but I just writes an article, Donald Trump is a modern day know-nothing. Know-nothing is not an antiquated term. Therefore, you wouldn't have to say modern day. You would just say, I mean, I don't know who's like the writer for this guy. But anyway, I've got a clip here. And this is from this meeting that was with Cruz and the head of this lady. Honorable Sarah Saldana, hearing on the administration's immigration enforcement. Check this out.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you to Senator Lee. Thank you to the witnesses for being here. The testimony we've heard today is powerful. Ms. Saldana, you are a Texan. You were a prosecutor in our state. You had a good reputation as a prosecutor. But you're serving in an administration that consistently refuses to follow the law. And we heard this morning the very real consequences of that. Now, in March, when you were testifying before the House, you were asked about sanctuary cities. Cities like San Francisco that defy federal law, and because of their defiance of federal law, Kate Steinle is no longer with us. She was murdered because of the refusal of local officials to recognize federal law. You were asked in that House hearing, should federal law compel state officials to comply with federal law? And your answer, and I want to quote verbatim, was thank you, amen, yes. Now, in my view, that was the former federal prosecutor speaking and giving an answer. And yet the next day, you issued a statement retracting what you'd said and saying, in fact, although you'd said amen, which is a pretty powerful statement from the heart, you didn't in fact mean that federal law should force local officials to comply with federal laws. I want to ask you, what political officials pressured you to change your statement?
Not a single one. This came from the original statement came from my heart. The clarification came from my heart. And I don't mean to quibble with you, Senator. I respect you greatly. But I will say this. The question was not asked. The question was very specific. Would it be helpful for detainers to be mandatory? The law enforcement response there is clarity is always helpful. But I wanted to be sure that people were not reacting to that as an indictment of PEP or working with communities, and that's what I'm committed to do.
So let me make sure I understand your testimony correctly then. You said then it would be helpful, as in presumably helpful is good, is beneficial, is something you support. So are you saying then that ICE supports making it mandatory to comply with federal detainers?
No.
So it's helpful, but you don't support it.
Well, no, sir. I support the what we have proposed and what we've been spending many hours on.
You just said it's
clarity,
but you don't support it.
Is always helpful, but cooperation and working with our state and local partners, something I've always done, I will continue to do it, and I'm committed to see it through with respect to these jurisdictions that haven't been working with.
Can you imagine that? The federal government has a lady working for them, and in undoubtedly an entire department where they're putting out things that they don't want to be agreed with. I mean, what's the point of putting them out? So she's placing at a higher level than these federal detainers working with the communities for social justice, however you define that.
It is difficult to work in an administration where you're required to take a position where, although something would be, in your own words, helpful, you nonetheless don't support it. Let me shift to a different topic. In the year 2013, how many criminal illegal aliens did the Obama administration release?
In 2014, it was a little over 30,000.
How many murderers?
In that year, sir, I can't remember the number right now, but I know that we had the statistic that was said earlier, the four-year period from 2010 to 2014, that there were 121 persons who committed crimes afterwards. But I can't provide you this exact number.
How many rapists?
I am not sure right now. I'd have to pull that number.
How many drunk drivers?
Notice she is at no point disagreeing with his line of questioning. Like, we would never release murderers into America. We would never release rapists or drunk drivers.
Same answer. I can certainly break that down for you. And, in fact, I think we're working on that right now. It's been requested before.
Yesterday, how many murderers did the Obama administration release?
Now, Senator, I don't know the answer to that question, but I want the American people to understand our job and our mission, if I may.
So the job and the mission of the ICE or the immigration people, whatever you know acronym they go under, their job supersedes and is higher than keeping murderers and rapists and arsonists and violent assaulters out of the country. There's a higher mission. You get this, right?
May. We don't release people willy-nilly. We release people pursuant to these statutes and regulations. There are only a limited number of crimes that we are required to detain people. It is mandatory. They're spelled out here very clearly. Many of them related to drug distribution and conspiracies. With the rest of the people, as you know very well, Zabidas requires us to release some. I think that's a small percentage of the total. Also, the immigration courts have half a million case backlog. They have the proceedings they go through. They will order release because many of these folks challenge their bond or their detention. But in the rest, and I think it's like 49% this past year, in the rest where ICE has discretion, where this statute has given us discretion, we have very well-trained, very well-experienced law enforcement officers who look at the entire case just like a magistrate judge or a federal judge does.
Ms. Saldana, I want to note that your testimony here, when I ask you how many criminals ICE released in 2013, you were off by a factor of three. You said 30,000. The correct answer is 104,000. There were 68,000 criminals, criminally legal aliens, that ICE declined to begin deportation proceedings against, despite the fact, as Senator Sessions observed, the federal law that you're holding up there says they shall be deported. The Obama administration refused to deport them. That's 68,000. In addition to that, there were 36,000 in deportation proceedings with criminal convictions that the Obama administration released. And I would note that among those were 193 murderers with homicide convictions, were 426 people with sexual assault convictions, were over 16,000 criminal illegal aliens with drunk driving convictions released by this administration because this administration refuses to follow the law.
Sir, those numbers, I'm looking straight at them.
All right. So, I mean, you don't need to hear anything else. I ask you, if the president of the United States had as his number one goal the safety of Americans, would he have released 107 criminals that were supposed to, according to the law, to be deported and allowed a number of, I can't remember what he said, 60,000 or whatever. So basically 170,000, 68,000 or whatever it was that they were prosecuting and they just stopped prosecuting him. How many criminals, how many murderers would a president let into the country cared about the health and welfare of the citizens? 523-1450. How many murderers, what's the threshold of murderers that the president would allow to come into the country and stay here against the law if he cared about the country? We've got a phone call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hey, Kelly, it's Tom.
Yeah.
Yeah, we ought to release some of those criminals into her neighborhood so she can enjoy them.
Well, I mean, 611,000 crimes by illegals in Texas, including 3,000 murders. That's just one state. That's the state right next to us. So I want somebody like Frankie or Kathy or anybody else to call up and explain the beautiful vision, this incredible goal that we're going towards that allows us to take all these criminal. Tom, there's got to be a good reason for bringing these criminals in and allowing them to stay, right? I mean, it's part of a bigger vision that the ignorant masses like myself and you can't understand, but I'd like it explained to me.
Can't explain it to you, Kelly, but I just looked up something on the internet where it says enhanced customer service for illegal aliens that he just got a hold of with some sort of executive order just recently, mm-hmm. where he's going to be able to fast track them.
He's going to bring in. He's going to nationalize 9 million, almost 10 million more people through this latest decision. We're getting 400,000 illegals a year.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure he's doing background checks on all of them.
Thanks for the call, Tom.
Thank you, sir.
All right, folks. We're going to come back and talk about Iran. I'll ask you again. How many murderers would the president... What's the threshold number of murderers that the president allows into the country if his number one goal is the safety of Americans? Is it 10? Is it 20? Is it 50? Is it 100? Or is it 200, as seems to be the case? This is AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. I'm Kelly O'Connell. 523-1450. We're going to come back and talk about Iran. Hey, Neil, what's up, buddy?
Hey, something to think about. I don't know if you have time for it next segment, but...
Neil, hold on.
I was watching... Yeah, go ahead.
Neil, hold on. I'm sorry, I was queuing up a clip. What'd you say?
Something to think about the immigration. The O'Reilly Factor reported two interesting things within the last month. One of them was that the tens of thousands of criminal illegal aliens released were due to a law in the deportation process. Anybody in the deportation process more than 6 months by law must be released no matter who they are, and this has been upheld by the court, by the Supreme Court.
Wow.
That's one thing. The other thing is that the reason why the children coming across the border has been reduced so dramatically.
It has?
It has, actually. It has. It was supposed to be like 130,000 by this time this year, something like that. It's down to like 10,000, 20,000, something like that. It's not great, don't get me wrong, but it's been dramatically reduced because Obama literally, and this is another thing O'Reilly reported, Obama literally put pressure on the Mexican president, to beef up their southern border so that so kids coming from Nicaragua, et cetera, would not get to Mexico.
So he's not, so whose fault is this?
Well, the Obama administration is the one who put pressure on Mexico for the southern border. And the law has to be changed. It's not all Obama's fault, is my point.
Well, no,
law has to
be. Hey, do you want to stay on and mention that?
Yeah, sure.
So how's everything going, man?
Good. How you doing?
Not too bad.
Good, good.
How about these 200 murderers? Did they have to stay in the country?
No, I don't know about that, to be honest with you. Obviously we need a new president because he does have a very, he is pro illegal immigrant, no doubt, but it's not 100% his fault is my point.
That's good. That's good. But they're still taking these people and distributing them across the country as if there's no question that they're going to stay.
Yeah. You're talking about the DACA folks.
Yeah, well, there are communities all across the nation where they've dropped off these illegals.
Yeah, the kids specifically you talk about there.
Well, all right, we're on the air. It's 6:37. You're listening to AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE, of course, and... I've got Neil Hooks on the line, but just to let you know, 72 degrees today, right now, 99 is the high, 72 is the low, partly cloudy. All right, so Neil Hooks calls up, Neil Hooks, who's been on the guest on the show in the past, pointing out that this is not all Obama's fault. I stand corrected. Go ahead, Neil.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I'm not an Obama fan, and I think he's terrible for immigration. However, a couple notes to make. I was watching the O'Reilly Factor the last month, and they reported two very interesting facts. The first, and this is by Eric Schon on the O'Reilly Factor, by the way, so you can Google. The reason why they're criminal illegal aliens being kept in the country is because there is a law specifically that says if you're in the deportation process greater than 6 months, you have to be released no matter what. And this has been upheld by the Supreme Court. So their hands are tied with regard to the deportation process. The second thing is that the The second thing that Eric Schon reported this on the O'Reilly Factor, he said that the reason why the kids have dramatically dropped coming across the border, which it has by tens of thousands, the reason they have dropped is because the Obama administration put huge pressure on the Mexican president to seal his southern border. I think that's kind of ironic, by the way. But he put pressure on the Mexican government to seal their border, and that's why there's been a drop in the DACA kids, if you will, the Dreamer kids or the DACA kids.
Well, I mean, then I would say it's in contingent upon Obama to, you know, I think it would be helpful if he saw his job as more related to communications, because I'd like to know. If everything is blamed on him, I'd like to know what is his fault and what is not his fault, what's under his control. For example, why couldn't Obama, since Obama has, on a number of laws, kind of turned his back or defied them, why couldn't he say, no matter what, there's no more murders that are going to be allowed to stay in the country under no circumstances? And if you want to sue the federal government on that, go ahead.
I think that's what that lady on that recording that you had was trying to say. She said that she was talking about that one law that I just mentioned, and she said that except for the very, very, very hard criminals, you know, murderers, they're not allowed to, they're supposed to be kept in the country, released, that is. Now, let me say this, though. The fix of the problem is becoming very clear. Obviously, we need to seal our border, just like we made Mexico seal their border. Secondly, we need to change this law with regard to the deportations. If we can't do that because it's unconstitutional, then we need more people in the immigration court system and ICE. That's what we need to do. We need to beef up that area so we don't have such a big backlog.
It's willful to, I mean, I don't, and to be totally honest, I would never claim that I knew everything that was Obama's fault or was permissive as opposed to accidental, all this different stuff. But there's no doubt that he's an enormous advocate for illegal immigration, which is a problem. You're bringing in people without status into the country. That starts a problem. It doesn't end the problem.
No, I agree, and that's why we need a new president in 2016.
Yeah, okay, Neil, thanks a lot for the call. Drive safely. Sounds like some truckers are passing you by there, but have a good day.
See you, my friend. Bye. Right.
Okay, I appreciate a call like that. I don't want to blame anything on Obama that is not his fault, but look, it's confusing to – I mean – if here is one of my fallback maneuvers here. If the president is willing to set aside X, Y, and Z laws for the illegals, let's just say he's super enthusiastic about the illegals, why couldn't he just as easily throw another law in there, a temporary order from the president, no more criminals are going to stay in the United States, and let the advocates for illegals, or I guess illegal criminals, sue the government. I mean, there's 611,000 crimes that were committed in the last 6 years by illegals in Texas. That is, I mean, that's a crime wave, right? I mean, imagine if there were 600,000 criminals created crimes done by illegals in this state in the last 6 years. I mean, we'd be shut down. Our court system could never handle it. But it's heartbreaking to see there were 3,000 murders done by criminals. And the law specifically states criminals shall not be allowed to enter. So, I mean, Obama's on the hook on this one. But I wanted to, anytime you got a challenge to what I'm saying, call me up. I got all day for that. We'll take a little break here. 6:43. This is AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. I'm Kelly O'Connell. 523-1450 and 805-6180 text in. It's 6:46, and just one last thing. The Obama administration is planning to expand a waiver program, which would allow even more illegal immigrants to gain legal status, and I think the number that I saw was 9 million more people. So the president is pro-illegal. I mean, most people understand that. If he stopped a bunch of children from coming across the border, good for him. I appreciate that. I salute that, because a lot of these kids and a lot of the women and kids that are coming across the border are getting raped. Who they're getting raped by, I don't know. I mean, something like 80 or 90% of these women are getting raped. That's astounding. I mean, that's a lot of, where are all these rapists is what I want to know. Anyway, switching gears here, I want to play just a few clips for you in response to the Iranian deal. And here's what I'm worried about. Number one, Krauthammer says the worst deal he's ever seen. Number two, there's secret deals as part of this deal, and it's very unnerving. And another senator says we've paved the way for Iran to get nuclear weapons, and this deal also accepts conventional weapons. Why did we have to do that? The answer is we didn't. Here's Senator Cotton from Arkansas.
Senator Cotton, it's Willie Geist. I'm wondering how and why these side deals would have been made in the context of this long international negotiation where you had the P5 plus one sitting down led by the United States. How could there then be another negotiation going on the side? And if it was, why didn't we stop it, or did we even know about it?
Well, that's a very good question, Willie. These are two of the most important questions in these negotiations. Iran's had almost 4 years to reveal the past military work that they've done in their nuclear program. And again, the Parchin military site is where they tested detonators for nuclear weapons. Now, this may have been a firm line that Iran would not draw, and the United States negotiating team simply was refusing to draw their own line or to walk away from the deal. So John Kerry acted like Pontius Pilate. He washed his hands, kicked it to the IAEA, knowing that Congress would not get this information unless someone went out to find it.
Pontius Pilate. Holy cow. Let's take a little break here. We do want to thank the law offices of Sam Cain for sponsoring the show. In pain, call Cain. They're focusing on personal injury, car wrecks, buses, heavy equipment, trucks, motorcycles, skateboards. 526-5263. In pain, call Cain. That's Sam Cain. Don't accept any inferior replacements. We'll be right back. I've got a little bit more. There's really not enough time to talk about all these things, but I just wanted to get them in your mind to think about a little bit over the weekend. We got serious problems with Iran, in my opinion. 6:49, 6:50 on the button. All right, so there's a question about what's in the deal for Iran. There is also a question as to the side deals, which the White House first was outraged and said there are no side deals, and then they admitted that there were. And then Susan Rice, the same lady that was involved with Benghazi, she admitted that they were happy with the side deals. So do you think as an American, the population in general should know what side deals are, or the deal itself, or does the president have the right to make his own deals with other countries without the knowledge or input of the rest of the country, including the Congress. Here is a little bit of Senator Risch to John Kerry. You got bamboozled.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's Senator Cardin, who I have the highest respect for, made a statement which I really agree with, and that is that we really need to leave emotion out of this. And I couldn't agree with you more. This should be done in a very non-emotional way. But that doesn't mean we got to leave common sense out of this, with all due respect. You know, we've gone from the mantra of no deal is better than a bad deal. And I've heard everybody say that a few weeks ago. And now we've gotten to the point where, well, you have to accept this or else it's war. The mantra has changed dramatically. And all I can say is, after reviewing this, even in a cursory fashion, anyone who believes this is a good deal really joins the ranks of the most naive people on the face of the earth. When you're dealing with the people that we're dealing with here, with the history they have of cheating and everything else, anyone who can say this is a good deal. I know the justification is, well, it's not perfect. Well, the word perfect shouldn't even be used in the sentence with this agreement. It isn't even close to that. One of the most disappointing things, and I joined the chairman in this in that closed hearing yesterday, is we've been told we have no choice in this. We have no choice in this because we have gone from the position where we started, where we had Iran isolated, and they were viewed on the world stage as a pariah. If we don't go along with this, we're told, the other negotiators are going to go along with this, and the United States will be isolated on this issue, and we will be the pariah on the national stage. Now, just think about that, where these negotiations have taken us from a situation where we had Iran exactly where we wanted them to now. If we don't go along with this, then we are going to be the isolated and pariah character on the national stage. Well, look, the other thing that was so important in this was verification. We have to have verification. Everybody said this is the number one thing on verification. Well, everyone here knows that there's a site called Parchin. And Parchin was a subject of these negotiations. And Parchin was designed, and I heard the secretary say, that we're going to ensure that their nuclear ambitions are only for peaceful purposes. How in the world does Parchin fit that? Parchin was designed and operated as an explosive testing place where they designed a detonation trigger for a nuclear weapon. Parchin stays in place. Now, does that sound like it's for peaceful purposes? Let me tell you the worst thing about Parchin. What you guys agreed to was we can't even take samples there. IAEA can't take samples there. They're going to be able to test by themselves. Even the NFL wouldn't go along with this. How in the world can you have a nation like Iran doing their own testing? Now, I know Secretary Moniz, who by the way, I think is one of the brightest guys that I know, has told us, oh, don't worry, we're going to be able to watch it on TV, and there's a good chain of custody for the samples that are going to be taken. Are we going to trust Iran to do this? This is a good deal. This is what we were told we were going to get when we were told that, don't worry, we're going to be watching over their shoulder, and we are going to put in place verifications that are absolutely bulletproof. We're going to trust Iran to do their own testing? This is absolutely ludicrous. Well, the one thing that bothers me incredibly about this is the billions of dollars that Iran's going to get. We've been briefed on the fact that while they have been in this horrible financial condition, and we have gotten them to a horrible financial condition, one of their national priorities has been to support terrorism. They've supported Hezbollah, Hamas, the Houthis with financial aid, with military aid, with every kind of aid there is. Everything we're trying to do in the world has their fingerprints on it, trying to do us in. So these billions of dollars are going to be put back in their hands within, I'm told, about 9 months. And again, we were told yesterday, it doesn't matter what we do. Congress, go ahead and do your little thing. It doesn't matter. because we don't have control over this money. Actually, it is the other people who are sitting at the table that have control over the money. And no matter what we do, they're going to release the billions of dollars. Well, I got to tell you, this is a very heavy lift when you sleep at night and you say, well, I'm going to vote to release $50 billion, started at $100 billion, now you got it down to $50 billion, whatever it is, knowing that that money is a portion of that money is going to be directly transferred to people who are going to be trying to kill Americans and who are trying to kill innocent people and that are trying to kill our allies. To say this is to be able to walk away from this and say that this is a good deal is ludicrous. With all due respect, you guys have been bamboozled, and the American people are going to pay for that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Stunning testimony. Kelly O'Connell, I got Ben Rossin in the wings. We're going to be back after the break on the air and talk about some local stuff. 6:59 a.m. Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE.
Will you and your friend come around? You and your friend gonna get on the hill.
Well, good morning, 7:06. Kelly here. And it is 72 degrees right now, partly cloudy, 99 is the high, 72 the low. Hopefully, in theory, we could get some rain. But in any event, your prayers and complaints have been heard. Ben Rossin is here with local content.
Good morning, Kelly. Happy Friday to you.
Happy Friday to you too, Ben. We've missed you. How you been?
Doing well. Pretty busy over at the county, and there's a few things that, of course, have gotten a lot of attention in the paper recently, so I appreciate the opportunity to come back
well,
and talk about
it. It's always wonderful to have you here. We should revive the Rossin Report.
We need to get that going again. That's absolutely
right. Okay, you heard it, folks. Can't break his word now. All right, so what's the latest? I saw $1.2 million going into lawsuit payout. What's going on?
Yeah, Kelly, that was a verdict from last week against the county in regards to the Kim Stewart lawsuit. Kim Stewart filed against the county for wrongful termination and retaliation and won that lawsuit pretty handily. $1.2 million is a big cost to the county.
Wow. So who's going to pay that?
Kelly, you and the other taxpayers here in Doñana County get to fit that bill.
Maybe we need to increase taxation.
Oh, I hope not, Kelly. We already did the largest tax increase in the history of Doñana County. At least now there's a way to spend that money. No, you know, Kelly, it's really frustrating when we have something like this happen. We've got to learn from it, first of all. You know, when you have a jury that rules against you to the tune of that level, you've got to learn something from it and move on and keep it from happening. Unfortunately, the county has several other similar lawsuits that are out in the wings, and we'll see what happens with those.
Wow. So why are we losing so many lawsuits?
Kelly, that's a really good question. You know, there's Kelly, I'm trying to be a little diplomatic here as I'm working on some things internally at the county, trying to get them resolved internally. But when you have that type of a lawsuit, you've got to learn something from it and make some changes. I do think it's worth noting that Kim Stewart, the situation that the lawsuit was covering, is something that happened 5 or 6 years ago. So this is not a recent thing, but still, nonetheless, something we need to learn from and move forward. change a few ways that we do things so that we don't keep losing residents' money. And that's a big concern for me.
Well, so anyway, I wonder how much money have we paid off in these last few years, or how much more do we have to pay? Is there a certain amount we're paying every year, or do we have to pay it all at one time? Or,
well, Kelly, our insurance costs are now at about $1.4 million a year.
Really?
That's just the cost for the insurance. So when you start, you know, out of this $1.2 million, a lot of it really won't come from the residents. Most of it will come from the insurance provider that we have, NMAC. We're a part of the pool there, which is not the best way to have your insurance, but we're grateful to have some. What will happen on that, the verdict was $1 million plus lost wages, which is $238,000 or something like that. I'm unclear if that number is going to be doubled because of the intent. I forget the exact wording there. And then there's about $500,000 in attorney's fees that'll be tacked onto that. So we're talking really close to about $2 million on that. The county will be responsible for about $235,000, just the lost wages portion.
Yeah, that now the jury awarded Stewart, this is from the Sun News, $154,840 in lost wages, $80,163 in benefits, and $1 million for emotional distress and damages. Stewart shed tears as the verdict was read. Undoubtedly, tears of happiness, but wow. Moving on.
Moving on. You know, Kelly, I've talked a lot in the past about the budget situation, and just to refresh your listeners, in 2007, a few years ago, the county was spending $93 million in their budget. The proposed budget that we were supposed to vote on Tuesday, and I'll touch on that in a minute, is for $154 million. So you have in a few years going from 93 to 154. And that's not a sustainable rate of growth. We cannot tax our way out of trying to keep up with that growth of county government. And that's why you saw earlier this year the largest tax increase in the history of Doñana County. Never before has a tax increase that size been put through. And the commission passed it on a 4-1 vote, with me being the only one voting against it.
What if Billy Golden Ear and Garrett had said, we're just doing this to pay off our lawsuits? Would you have supported?
No. Kelly, we got to be more responsible in what we're doing. You know, one of the problems that we have right now is we do not have a risk manager at the county. We
really?
Do not have an internal auditor.
Well, why not?
Both of those positions have been funded by the county commission and have not been filled by the county manager.
And who's the county manager?
Julia Brown.
Downtown Julia Brown.
And I've brought this up probably 5 or 6 times. We have got to fill those positions so that we are more aware of where the problems are. We're an organization that has 850 employees. This is a big organization, and we need to be taking proper actions to mitigate our risk and make sure that we're not paying out these kind of lawsuits.
All right. So, folks, now who can people call to ask for that?
Well, they can certainly call me. My cell phone is 649-4153, 649-4153. But they could also call over to the county building and leave a message there for any of the other commissioners or for the county manager. And that number is 525-5800, 525-5800.
All right. So who's the person who would decide whether that's going to be filled or not?
The county manager.
Who's the county manager?
Julia Brown. Now, I would say that the five commissioners, and specifically the chairman, Chairman Billy Garrett, have a lot to say over what the county manager should be doing.
Isn't there a guy by the name of Noland?
Bill Noland is the finance director, absolutely.
Does he make any decisions on this stuff?
I don't think so. The specific thing on these two positions is Julia Brown has eliminated the two positions and used the funding in other places. The funding for the internal auditor has been used for a new grants department. The funding for the risk manager has been used for the constituent services department.
Was any of it used for cosmetic surgery department?
Not that I'm aware of.
Just asking. All right, so here's somebody texting, what about our sheriff's department? Time to start a GoFundMe Facebook.com site.
Kelly, that's great. Pretty good. That's a real good text. You know, we have got to support the Sheriff's Department. I mentioned what's happened with the sheriff, with the overall budget going from $93 million to $154 million. DASO has a fund line. It's called the DASO General Fund inside the budget. And I've not gone all the way back to 2007, but in 2009 to today, they've increased by $1 million. So when we've had this out-of-control spending growth in county government, the sheriff has gotten $1 million out of it, and that's it. There's a reason that the sheriff is saying we need to replace 71 vehicles.
Well, Kiki seems like he's a very – when I got to know him, I met him, he seemed like a very sincere, straightforward, down-to-earth. Basically, you know, like everything's out in front. You know, give me more money so I can pay my people. Let's get some new cars. Let's get a communication system that goes across the county. What, I mean, is that really excessive?
No, and that needs to be the top priority. I mean, I've mentioned we've got out-of-control spending growth at the county. There's no question there.
Cancerous?
Cancerous, but it's not going to the sheriff's department. And public safety needs to be the number one always. And it's very disappointing that the rest of the commission doesn't see it
that
way.
How big is the cosmetic surgery fund for the county? Folks, we're talking to Ben Rossman, and we're going to find out more. And how long do we have you for today?
One more segment, Kelly.
Oh, dang it. Call in, folks. Let's keep him here a little longer. 523-1450, 805-6180. It is 7:15, and we will be right back to talk about more county shenanigans with County Commissioner Ben Rossman. For your weekly segment on what's dysfunctional in the county, we do have a phone call here. Got Ben Rossman in studio. It's wonderful to have him back again. A cheerful reunion. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
It's Patty.
Yes, Patty O'Reilly. What's up?
I had a question for Ben. I ran into a bill that was passed through the county. Well, the code of conduct was changed a couple of years ago, or so. No, it was this year, and I couldn't find the old one. I just found the amended copy. Is there an old copy of that code of conduct?
Patty, there sure is, and I'd be glad to get that into your hands. You probably don't want to give me your email over the air, but if you want to give me...
What's your number, Ben? I'll call you later.
Perfect. My number is 649-4153. I'll look forward to hearing from you.
4153?
4153, correct.
Okay, thanks. And then I had another question. It's that country, Aubergine? Let me see. I'll spell it. I can't say it. It's Aubergine, A-Z-E-R-B-A-I-J-A-N.
It's a Muslim country. You can go ahead. Don't you want to?
Okay, well, I don't know how to say it, but my trails are leading me to this country here and to Turkey. And we're making deals here in the state of New Mexico at the higher levels with these two countries. And everybody needs to look into this. Okay, I'm still looking into it, so I can't really say anything right now.
All right.
Oh,
well, when you
and
get...
one more question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, you know what? I'll ask Ben and I'll get with you on Monday on it.
All right. Well, I've got a salute to you, Patty.
Mm-hmm.
Ready?
Yeah.
Don't hold your breath there. Got to get it queued up. Here we go.
Auto parts.
Thanks.
And worldwide on BobandTom.com and the.
All right. So, well, it's a work in progress. Got to salute our callers.
You know, Kelly,
Patty O'Reilly there. Yes, go ahead.
As we were talking during the break, you've got some great listeners, and even had someone come up to me yesterday at the mall and say, "Hey, I heard you're going to be on the radio tomorrow. Thanks for coming back on." So, just want to shout out to all of your callers because you've got a great group of listeners there, Kelly.
I can honestly say that your service to the community is so outsized of your position, and I know the county commission is important, but I mean, I was just thinking about this earlier with Obama. There's stuff that is in Obama's favor that I don't know about because nobody ever mentions it. I think he's terrible at communicating. I think you're very good at communicating stuff and bringing to mind what's important to people, throwing it out there and letting people debate it.
Hey, Kelly, I don't even have a teleprompter.
I know.
You know, Kelly, earlier in the first segment, I kind of hinted at something I want to jump into, and we have the county, the state has an Open Meetings Act, which requires that all meetings are held in an open manner so that the public can know what's going on, and that's a very good thing to have. The Open Meetings Act requires counties and other bodies as well to publish what's an acceptable amount of notice for meetings so that everybody knows what's going to happen. And the county passes that every year. Most recently, we passed that in January. And I'm going to read just one sentence out of here.
Go for it.
Notice of the regular meeting's agenda shall be available 7 calendar days in advance of the meeting date, but may be amended as long as any amended agenda is available at least 72 hours in advance. We have a meeting scheduled on Tuesday to vote on the budget. There is no agenda yet for that, and of course, as anyone can count, we are within 7 days. That meeting notice should have gone out on Tuesday of this week and has not yet gone out. So we end up in a real interesting situation here where the budget is required by state law to be submitted before the end of the month. And because of the Open Meetings Act and the fact that staff has not published this meeting, we are now within there's now no way to put a agenda together according to, you know, they'll look for some loophole. But the idea is that these meetings are supposed to be open and transparent to the public so people can see what's going on and participate in the process. And that's not happening. And I know I've brought this up before, you know, transparency.
You've never brought this up before. You've brought up violations of the Open Meeting Act. You've never brought one up that before they happened, and I'm surprised and disappointed. A lot of people in this town feel like meetings are held when most citizens can't get there.
Absolutely. Held at 9 o'clock on a Tuesday morning when most of us have real jobs that we have to do.
I challenge, and I'm sure that the listeners challenge the city and the county to change this. Let's have important meetings when everybody can attend. What's the purpose of having a democracy?
We need to have that public input, and oftentimes it's even a little bit worse than that, Kelly, because our meetings will go from 9 o'clock till 3 o'clock, and some of the controversial items will be put at the very end of the agenda. Mm. So if someone showed up at 9 o'clock, then they're sitting around for 6 hours waiting to get a chance to have their input
heard. It's called the golden earring effect.
It's not right is what it is, you know, and we need to get that change to where we encourage that public input and have those things at a time when people can be there for them. But to not publish a meeting like this and then to proceed to have a meeting, boy, Kelly, this is really in a bad light for the county.
What number do they call to complain about this?
Kelly, as always, I'll always give out my phone number.
Well,
my goal
give
is
out
to
Billy Garrett's number for once.
Billy Garrett's number. Kelly, I don't have that one on speed dial here, but the office is 525-5800, and they can transfer him right over to Billy's number.
525-5800, and folks, ask for Billy Garrett, leave a message on his machine and say, well, number one, we want these meetings advertised ahead of time, number one. Number two, we want meetings held when everybody can go to it. It's absolutely ridiculous to act like this is a little tyranny here.
That's right, Kelly, and part of that is, as we are kind of alluding to in this, is that we need to get some new commissioners and a different attitude on the county commission. And I'll remind your listeners that the election for the county commission for 3 of the 5 positions is coming up next year.
Who's going for election?
We have Dr. David Garcia from the South Valley, from the Chaparral Anthony area. He's up for reelection. Then we have two individuals that are not running for reelection. Leticia Benavides in District 4, which is Hatch down to Mayfield High School, and then Wayne Hancock, which is Highway 70, Sonoma Ranch, all that section of the
Wayne
county.
Wayne Hancock is not running for reelection?
He's announced that he's retiring to Florida and won't be seeking reelection. So we'll have two new commissioners. I'd like them to be good government commissioners.
Yeah, no doubt. So, we got to have better candidates is what people are telling me. Get rid of the recall efforts and get better candidates. What do you think about that?
Kelly, you know, in county government, we don't deal with a lot of the federal issues. You know, we're dealing with roads, dams, budgets, the sheriff's office, those type of things. And so we need candidates that really care about the local issues that make our county better. The infrastructure here, we don't need candidates that are caring about the federal issues and want to make this a stepping stone for federal issues.
Give me your top 5 or 10 if you were gonna put a little list together of things you'd like to improve in the county during your tenure.
Sure, the absolute top one is improving the economy. You know, when we look at county gross receipts tax, so the money that's come to the county is down. County in outside of the municipalities is down 14% from last year. That means there's 14% less economic activity taking place in the county. Once you throw the municipalities in there, the GRT is down by 0.9%, so basically 1%. So we have 1% less economic activity taking place in Doñana County than we did last year.
But if you're, let's just say most people are not involved in the municipalities, right? So it's down.
Down 14% out of
the. That's incredible.
It's enormous.
In the city, it's down 14%.
No, outside of the city, down 14.
Okay.
If you include the city, then we're only down 1%.
All right, I misunderstood. I thought you were talking about the colonias, which I guess are kind of anti-municipalities. But let me ask you this. In your opinion, what's the cause of it? The tax?
The cause of it, Kelly, is an anti-business attitude here in Doñana County. And to prove that, I would look north, south, east, and west. Every single one of those counties is growing. Every single one of those counties has more economic activity this year than they did last year. The only one that doesn't is right here in Doñana County. We're surrounded by counties that are increasing what's going on, increasing their economic activity.
All right. Some other things you'd like to change.
Sure. Sorry, I didn't mean to get on that one so hard.
All
Another
right.
one would be the budget. We need to get the budget out in a timely fashion. We need to control spending and stop this runaway activity. And we need to reduce the most recent gross receipts tax. That needs to go away. That's not needed, and it's evidence of just a runaway county government.
Oh, that's terrible. All right, so folks, let's take a break. Can you stay for one more little segment?
I'll stay for a little bit here, Kelly.
All right, so we're talking to Ben Ross and our old buddy here, listening to another chapter out of the book called The Rossin Report, and very interesting stuff, very dysfunctional stuff going on out there. And I've got RJ coming on, the whistleblower's coming on. He's got a lot of news. He's coming on Wednesday, so we're going to get more news. But we're going to get the Rossin Report back here again, folks. You called for it. The heavens have heard your prayers. 7:30, we'll be right back. Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450 to call in, 805-6180 to text. And we will be back for one more segment with Ben. And I've got Ben Rossin here. We're doing more of the Rossin Report. And I really heard from an incredible number of people what happened. I mean, on the air, but a lot of people off the air. What happened to the Rossin Report? We miss Ben. And you know what? I didn't realize I would kind of become addicted to it myself because it's news you can't get through the paper.
You know you can't, Kelly. And I hope that every time I come on, I recognize that your listeners are making a decision to listen here as opposed to doing other things. And I want to provide value for their time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you do. I mean, there's never been a show where we did the report where I felt bored or I felt like we were retreading old ground, you know. So what should people be thinking about right now with the county?
Well, I would say, going back to where we ended last segment, I would say they should be thinking about running for office. They should be thinking about their friends that would be good to run for office. And if they can't come up with anybody, then make a campaign contribution to my campaign, and then I'll funnel it to good candidates that'll be running. But we'll have 3 offices that'll be up for election, and 2 of them will become new people. And so we need good government people who are focused on wanting to make Doñana County better.
What qualities make a good commissioner?
Kelly, you don't want someone who's going to, you know, I kind of mentioned this before. We have to have someone who's going to focus on local government issues. focus on running a good organization. At 850 employees, we have a big organization, and we need to be focused on how to run it efficiently, how to run it effectively, how to be responsive to people, and how to control the spending and bring that in line. And